If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Now, here's Ira.
The Sound Podcast is proud to be part of the Osiris Podcast family, a growing community of music and cultural podcasts connecting music fans like you with conversation, commentary, and of course, music. For more, visit osirispod.com. Before we get to today's show, just wanted to thank you for listening to this episode. Don't forget to hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, leave a review, or share this episode with a friend. We've launched the Sound Podcast merch store featuring great designs, including our world-famous bear on tees, long-sleeve tees, hoodies, and much more in various sizes and colors. Check it out at thesoundmerch.com and support the Sound Podcast creators while looking awesome. The show starts now.
If you're down and confused and you don't remember who you're talking to,
concentration
slip away.
Cause your baby
so far away. Well, there's a road in your fisted palm, and the evil flies with the dove.
And if you can't be the one you love.
You've been listening to an amazing cover of Love the One You're With from Reid Genauer and folks from the album Conspired to Smile. Way, way, way back in the day, I was obsessed with a band from Vermont called Strange Folk. There was something at the time that I really dug about the gentle voices of the singers, the great playing, and indeed the messages of the songs. I felt their sound was a throwback to other sounds I was digging at the time, like American Beauty from the Grateful Dead and Music from the Big Pink from the band. It was 1997, as I recall, and I was a tie-dyed Jufro hippie, and I sought music that none of my classmates knew or cared about. I would read Relics to learn more about the Grateful Dead, Fish, and once in a while, new bands like Strange Folk. I kept an eye on them, but they would eventually break up. Reid would later emerge as a solo artist and then founded Assembly of Dust. This is all to say that this guy, Reid Genauer, no matter what else is going on in his life, is a musician, a very talented one. I'm fortunate some 21 years later to reminisce with some of my favorite musicians and bring their stories to you. Reid recently released a social feel-good experiment called Conspire to Smile. It's a cover album filled with songs that no doubt will make you happy in these less than happy times. Oh, and the guest musicians on this record are mostly people you've heard of on this show and are well within the community. With that, and now spinning Conspire to Smile on a hard drive in the same way I spun Strange Folk's Weightless and Water CD endlessly, we caught up with Reid Genauer, and I can tell you, it was an enormous thrill. Our conversation started when I asked Reid to catch us up on his goings-on. He is so busy in both his professional music career and his daily job away from the guitar and mic.
They require, you know, different parts of my brain, but I don't know. I've spent much of my life feeling sort of like a Frankenstein, and I'm doing my best to, you know, feel more like Buddha.
Very relatable. Very relatable.
But let's see. You know, first and foremost, I'm a dad. I got three little boys who are awesome, the ages 7, 9, and 12. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to teach them to be, you know, well, I'm just trying to have fun with them, trying to keep their pants on, and then trying to keep them, teach them to be good little humanoids. And by day, I'm working at NugsNet, which, for those who don't know it, is a live music download and streaming service. And we power Live Fish, most notably, but Live Metallica, Live Bruce Springsteen, Live Pearl Jam. And that's a cool place to work because I am not only an employee, but I'm also a member, much like the Hair Club for Men did.
Right, right.
So, and I guess that's part of, you know, it's a return to form just to be around people really passionate about live music and particularly about, you know, bands that I either know or love or both.
Right.
And musically, I ran a Kickstarter this winter to fund an album that I call Conspire to Smile. And it was my response to what feels like, I don't know, a sort of national depression may be too strong a word, but certainly dissatisfaction. And I think a feeling of shared helplessness. And I was beating my head against the wall feeling like I needed to stop obsessing over the news and just do something.
Right.
And I was scratching my head on what to do. And then it struck me that, you know, it was right in front of me. Music is, and always has been, a universal salve. And so what I did is brought together, all the members from both of my bands, Strange Folk and Assembly of Dust. And that unto itself was kind of cool to have them playing on the same records. Sometimes, you know, in different arrangements and like cross pollinating.
Right.
And then we added, you know, another, I don't know, 12 musicians who were not, the criteria was they had to be, you know, bros. so that it wasn't, and they had to be smoking. but they had to be friends because I wanted it to have the effect of building community and creating sort of, you know, inserting some positive message and a sense of security that I think people are lacking. And it worked. So we had like 24 musicians on it. It's been released. There's a soft release, you know, really for the Kickstarter supporters. And then I'm gearing up for just a run of 4 dates with a few of the co-conspirators to launch it.
Yeah, it's an amazing cast. It really is a who's who of old and new jam band and music royalty. Jennifer Hartswick, Alex Koford, Lebo, Graham Lesh, Metzger, Ryan Montbleu, Elliot Peck. I mean, these are all names that certainly listeners to this show are widely aware of, but people who are just into music more generally would be aware of many of these people. It must be so exciting, or must have been so exciting, to get all of these people in a room together to play some of these, you know, really happy songs. I guess that was ultimately the goal of the music, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So the, you know, the thought was to, you know, most of the songs are covers, but were to choose songs that sort of have a legend unto themselves. And, you know, as a songwriter, I think I've under-indexed on playing covers. I probably should play more, but it feels like, you know, cheating kind of. And in this case, it felt like the right thing to do, because a song like All You Need Is Love or Let Love Rule or, you know, People Get Ready.
Right.
Has like a gravitas of its own, and in some ways carries the, you know, the music plays the band. So that very much was the idea. And then what's really trippy about it, and if you, particularly if you listen to the record, is it has a certain, I mean, it's produced. I wanted it to sound sort of, you know, different from the things I've done before, which is hard to do, right? Because there's a reason that there's a similarity to Assembly of Dust and Strange Folk. It's an aesthetic that, you know, I'm called to. But so I tried to willfully, have it be something, sonically anyway, have there be a nugget of freshness. And but what's amazing, it does have a certain live quality to it.
Right.
And none of the musicians were in the same room.
Oh, wow.
So there's actually 27, and not a single one, actually, with the exception of Koford and Graham Lesh, not a single one were in the same room. It's all. So what I did is I agreed with, it was a really sort of like Frankensteinian process, and one that's the opposite of anything I've ever done. But I agreed with Dave Diamond, the drummer, on feels and tempos for the songs. First, we haggled over songs and arrangements, and he's a multi-instrumentalist. So, you know, a drummer who didn't play guitar probably, or didn't, you know, understand just basic chord changes and stuff, might not have been able to do this. But we haggled over tempos and feels, and we wanted them to have, you know, in most cases, a fresh feel. So it wasn't just the same groove as on the record. And then he laid down the drum tracks for all the tunes first. And then, and did a reference track of him strumming and playing guitar. And then I did the real reference tracks, you know, with, at my house with guitar and vocals. And then we flew them to 3 different bass players. So it's got Mark Friedman from, you know, The Slip most notably. And he's gone on, he's just amazing.
Right.
He's been playing with Ryan Montbleu a lot. Eric Glockler from Strange Folk, and John Lassesse from Assembly of Dust. So then we had basics, and then it started flying all around to vocalists and, you know, piano players and the like. So it's pretty cool. It's like a modern miracle.
It's really cool. And what's cool, too, is that aside from the Kickstarter, it's now available on your website for free.
Yep.
So who's paying? Like, did all of these artists agree to do this in the spirit of the project? Is that the idea?
They did.
Well, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And it really is. And I went, you know, I've been quiet the last couple months because I was hammering people, both musicians and fans alike, in willing this thing to life. And then my plan is, you know, late fall, early winter to sort of have the official release. So for right now, it's for those in the know.
Right.
The co-conspirators, so to speak.
it's a brilliant idea. It really is. And you're planning to take... well, you've been playing, you know, these shows that are called Regana and Folks already, but you plan to take these shows on the road and have people play probably many of these songs on the road, but some of your older material as well, right?
Yeah, so we've got, you know, as a core, 4 dates on the books in January and March. With the same lineup, core lineup. It's Metzger, Lebo, Danny Eisenberg, who is part of the Terrapin Crossroads Mafia, but also played in Ryan Adams' band and
right.
plays with the Mother Hips. Dave Diamond and John Lassass from Assembly of Dust, both who have other musical projects. But that's the band, and then we'll have some of our musical. Brothers and sisters come in and you know play a song or two in each city. So I'm super pumped. It worked. You know, if nothing else, my metric for success was A, making myself feel better and feeling like I did something,
right?
And I can check that box. Mm-hmm. And two is like not look. I'd love it if this thing became the White Album, but. Really, my goal is like, hey, if I can positively affect 500 people,
right?
That's real scale in the face of, you know, what people are struggling with. So.
Strange Folk, you still get together with the guys from Strange Folk and do dates as Strange Folk. You still get together with the guys
yep.
from Assembly and do dates as Assembly of Dust. Is it still fun for you? I mean, it's probably a great outlet knowing that, you know, you can go play gigs, even though you do have a day job and are pretty serious about your day job, but it still must be pretty fun for you to get out there, on stage and bang out some tunes and laugh and smile and try to remember words to things, right?
Yeah, it's more than that. You know, yes, it is fun. You know, I heard there's a famous, I don't know if it's famous or not, it's famous to me, where Garcia says, you know, we're not entertainers. Mm-hmm. You know, some people just happen to find it entertaining.
Right.
And that's how I feel about music is it's not, you know, a pastime or a hobby. It's kind of genetically encoded into who I am, and I don't do it because I want to. I do it because I need to. And so really what Strange Folk, I left in a whirl of flame and you know post-apocalyptic rock and roll
yeah.
grandeur
yeah
in like 2001, and we started playing again in 2012, and we do a select handful of dates. Our most central one is we do our annual Eden Festival in August in Vermont,
right.
And it's astounding. There is a tribe 25 years later that heeds the call, and it's again more than fun. It's like a moral obligation.
Uh-huh.
And it's like a deep part of who I am. So, you know, that is there. We've been grumbling about it for a while, but we'd like to put out a new record. So there's fresh material and we're not just reliving, Weightless and Water. And Assembly of Dust is alive and well. Our guitar player, Adam, is in the process of moving from New Hampshire to Virginia. Needed a little window of time to breathe, and so it's what gave me the bandwidth to do Conspire to Smile.
Right.
And when he's settled and ready, we'll come back out swinging. So.
Yeah, it's been 2016, right, since the last studio album. Is that right? Tales from the Oregon Trail?
Yeah, and that wasn't even really... That was the live, like, you know...
Right.
A live mixed record. So really...
Sunshot
yeah. is the last formal AOD record. And then, of course, Conspire to Smile, which is this year. So if you look at it, I think I probably do, like, a record every 2 years or so. And then a live one in between. That's been my cadence, something like that.
Are you writing songs all the time, or is that something that you have to sit down and actually set yourself to do?
It's funny. It's like, it's similar to my other answers. I think, you know, if I didn't have all this other content packed into my life, wiping butts and you know, and showing up for work, I would do it all the time.
Right.
And in the absence of that luxury, I carve out time. So, you know, last Christmas, for example, my family left a week before I did, and I just went, you know, like stir crazy, man cave nuts for a week, didn't leave the house and wrote a bunch of songs. So I have a bunch in the hopper, and I try and do that periodically. So I'm still writing. I've got a little war chest, and then the question is, there's so many things I want to do creatively, is
right.
how to best service them. I mean, one, it's an aside, but another cool part of this Kickstarter is one of the things I offered was a book, a lyric book, and you know, it's kind of ironic that I live in the jam band world and I'm known as a songwriter and lyricist, but so be it. And I guess it's not by accident. I was always enthralled with Robert Hunter
mm-hmm.
and how the lyricism and the sort of, I don't know, the lore and the power of those lyrics was woven into the Grateful Dead experience.
Right.
And I suppose I fashioned myself in part after him. And one of the things that I did as part of this Kickstarter is 30 years of songs, 100 tunes in a coffee table book.
Wow.
That that is my photography, and then 100 songs that I wrote and recorded over 30 years. So it's pretty special thing for me, even if nobody, well, certainly the Kickstarter folks will get a copy. And then it was like it's very material, you know. It's one thing to say I've written and recorded 10 albums or written 100 songs or played 48 out of 50 states. It's another thing to slap a book down that's your life's work and sort of be able to hold it. It's really, really was a profound experience for me.
Shel Silverstein was also a big influence on your writing. I mean, that's why I read somewhere that's, you know, why you enjoy writing is because of Shel.
It was my gateway drug.
Yeah.
Sort of creativity.
And what's crazy, and I just found this out, and I'm silly, but Shel was a pretty accomplished musician, too. I mean, it wasn't just, you know, The Giving Tree or all of those famous things, but he was a pretty accomplished musician, which... was sad that I didn't know until recently.
The most notable thing was he wrote Boy Named Sue for
right.
Johnny Cash, which if you think about his poems, it's like, duh.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds, you know, like it
right.
could have been in Where the Sidewalk Ends, Boy
right.
Named Sue.
Right, right, right. Yeah, it was...
But I guess what I... Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, sorry.
I insist.
No. You were going to say.
What I was going to say is there's a similarity in Shel's writing that to Robert Hunters that may not be obvious, but I guess the best way I can illustrate is to say, you know, there's part of what's really compelled me to the Grateful Dead is that it's beautiful and badass at the same time. And, you know, there's a playfulness and a gravitas and this duality to it. And it makes it, you know, if it were all rainbows and unicorns, you'd kind of, you know, be like, gag me with a spoon.
Right.
And if it was all like the darker stuff, you'd kind of be like, man, you know, I'm depressed as it is. I don't really need you to reinforce that. And somehow they strike a balance that is magical. And I think Shel Silverstein does the same. Like, they're not just cute little, you know, limericks that might, you know, Sally went fishing. There's a gravitas to them, and much like Dr. Seuss, I suppose, and like some sagely component. Right. And I don't know, it's like it spoke to me as a kid, and then that same, I get the same sensation from Hunter and the Grateful Dead.
You mentioned 25 years of doing this. It's been a little bit longer, but you can pretend you're younger. That's fine.
I said 30, actually.
Did you?
1998 to
2018. Yeah, 16. Yeah. I guess the Eden Festival. Anyway, there was, it doesn't matter. The point is that are you impressed with A, that jam band culture is still around, and B, there are new bands carrying the torch for you guys and Percy Hill and Spin Doctors and Blues Traveler, and some of them are even not only are still actively doing the things that you guys were doing, whether it's Widespread or Fish, or I mean, this jam band scene continues to grow and is just now again making this comeback similar to the early 90s and onwards.
Yeah. I am astounded and I'm pleased and it, you know, it tickles me. Mm-hmm. But when I think about it, I'm not totally surprised. I mean, another like, I don't know, seed of an idea that I think informs why that is, you know, why the scene continues to prosper is, it was either in Jerry on Jerry, which if you read it really is kind of like the Amazon series, is definitely, you know, either derivative of that book or was done in tandem because right. It's the same story. Right. And in it, he talks about, what he's trying to accomplish, and you know, and that he was 100% committed to his art, you know, even so much so that his own life was like a rounding error against the art.
Right.
And it wasn't just for art's sake, it was the spirit that it represented, and that it, you know, it's the music plays the band thing, and the notion of sort of channeling something bigger than us and beyond us. It's Joseph Campbell like, and you know, his central theme is that all mythology and storytelling, whether it's a video game or, you know, Terrapin Station, is a metaphor for the, you know, for the sense of awe and wonder and, you know, dare I say, spirituality that we feel but can't quite express or understand. And Jerry says that, you know, he hopes that what they've accomplished at the end of the day is to create a spark of that.
Right.
That has momentum of its own that others can take and do with as they please. And he references Kerouac, I think, and Neil Cassidy, who didn't do anything other than just be.
Yeah.
As his, those were like Jerry's Jerry.
Right.
And he took the spark from them and infected, you know, the Grateful Dead with it. And his hope was that they would do the same. And I think if you look at not just the jam band scene, but like U.S. culture in general, they have permeated every corner of it. And it's why there will never be a band like them before, because of what their intent was. It wasn't to make music. It was to change, you know, like the story. And they did.
Yeah.
So it's no wonder that there's, you know, a horde of us running around trying to do the same, you know, through our own little microcosmic, you know, extensions of what they started and more than likely didn't even start, but harnessed, you know, from disparate sources prior to them.
As somebody who has been involved in the scene for so long and obviously holds a special place for the Grateful Dead, how impressed are you with the, and you referenced them earlier, how impressed are you with the goings-on at Terrapin Crossroads that, you know, Phil has been able to establish this venue for young artists who either live in the area or artists who come to the area to sort of cultivate their talent and do it in the spirit of the Grateful Dead?
Yeah, I mean, I was, before I moved out here, well, you know, I've always sort of quote unquote longed for San Francisco. I'm sure it's because of the fascination I've held with, you know, the counterculture movement of the 60s and then, you know, more acutely the Grateful Dead. And I wrote a blog article actually on my website about Terrapin and what's, you know, there's so much either explicit or implied extensions of the Grateful Dead going on in music, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, J-Rad or Dead & Co. or Dark Star Orchestra, which are explicit, or, you know, name any one of the jam bands from my generation or the Fresh Batch, mm-hmm. it's implied, right? There's right. That spark is there. What struck me about Terrapin that's so cool is that because it's Phil's and because he's there so often and because Graham, his son, is such a central part of it, and because he's attracted, sort of like Conspire to Smile, like these musicians who are not only blazing, but really, you know, are drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yep.
It's, you know, it's a really special thing, but I guess what makes it most special is that it's like the book I was describing of my lyrics, mm-hmm. it's physical. So the notion of the Grateful Dead has always been this, you know, this energy, this ideal, this community, but not a place. And Terrapin, it doesn't encompass the entire Grateful Dead, but it's a corner of that mm-hmm. experience that you can go touch. And that makes it really, really unique. And then the caliber of music that's being played right. is ridiculous. Every day of the week you can go in there and see blazing, you know, Grateful Dead inspired music, mostly for free. So
it's amazing.
It's like, it's really a special place. And it's not, you know, I wrote in the blog post, it's certainly not the most beautiful place I've ever been to. Food is good, but it's not like you walk in and you're in a shrine,
right.
But it's shrine like because the energy that we're describing is contained, you know, at least in part in these four walls. So it's cool. Having said that, though, I was talking to Jason Crosby, who, you know, who's a central figure in that scene and
yes.
who's just really an astounding human and redonkulous musician. And I was listening to Fish from like 1994 right. last night. And it struck me that, you know, everything that I've done and that my peers in the music scene have done has meaning and reason for being and, you know, is delicious in its own way. But there really are only, in my mind, do jam bands. You know, the Grateful Dead and Fish. Maybe the Almonds.
Yeah, and Trey has been on fire lately. I mean, just on fire.
He has, and I was A-B-ing it, and I will, you know, I will give you that. And the guy's 50 plus years old.
Uh-huh.
But go back and listen.
Yeah. No. Well, that's when obviously like 92, 93. Yeah, I get it. I know. And people, you know, of my generation, and probably I think you're a little older than I am, but of your generation that remember those early days, you know, when it was still fresh, still are so excited by those early. I just think the new rig has added a whole new.
No, I agree. I mean, they've got a new lease on. Yeah. On their gig, I you can feel it. There's an intensity and an intention, and mm-hmm. I totally agree. It's a second coming, but I saw Fish for the first time. I didn't even know who they were in 1990 at UVM at the front.
Mm-hmm.
I was front row. Mm-hmm. It was a Sunday night, and it was like my mind was blown. I'd never seen anything like it, and you could feel. Talk about gravitas. You could just feel something was going to happen, you know. And if it didn't, you know, hindsight, whatever, victory goes to the winners, or history is told by the winners, you know. And I'm sure there were many bands that felt that way. But that's how I felt the first time. I felt two things. One is, I don't totally get this.
Right.
I'm kind of disoriented, but holy shit, this is amazing.
Right.
And then I was looking through like their tour dates, you know, from 90 to 94. And by 94, they're playing MSG. So in like 3 years, they just blew up. It's amazing.
Well, Rieg, Genauer, and Fran, and folks, you have 2 dates in January, one in Arcata, California, one at the Great American Music Hall. And then in March, you're coming east to Boston and, of course, to the Brooklyn Bowl, where your old pal Pete Shapiro heads things up. So those are 4 dates that people will want to look for. They can go to your website and check out Conspire to Smile and lots of other cool things for them to listen to and read and laugh at. And I can't thank you enough. Sincerely, for taking the time today to talk about where things are at, and for Conspire to Smile, it's a much needed break from the craziness that we see all around us. So thanks for doing that project as well.
Thank you, man. Thanks for taking the time to listen to me babble.
I'm not joking when I say I could have spoken with Reed for hours more. What a great, honest storyteller who is full of anecdotes and knowledge that I'm quite envious of. Oh, and he is a terrific musician. Just absolutely outstanding. I'd encourage you to download Conspire to Smile at reedgenauer.com and check out his other music, his blog, and the lyrics section on his site. Before we leave you, given the context of Reed's career and the jam bands that have followed in the wake of Strange Folk, Assembly of Dust, and even the Grateful Dead, here is Rieg, Genauer, and folks with Not Fade Away.
fade away.
Been listening to the Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit osirispod.com. Thanks for listening.
Osiris.